Welcome back to Instant Mom, navigating solo foster and adoptive motherhood while attempting a go at sanity. So today is going to be a Q&A edition. I have been so bad about responding to messages that I get from people who are interested in foster care and adoption, and I am at this point too lazy to go through and write everybody back, so I thought this would be better. So I'm really sorry if I have not responded to your message. It is not personal. I just get tired slash lazy slash overwhelmed, and I then procrastinate and put it off, and I'm just the worst. So I thought I would take some of the questions and respond to some of the messages that I've received. So I will just jump right in. Let me pull all of these up here. I really need to be more professional about these guys. Okay. So the first one was, one more second. Okay. All right. First one is, you know what? We're going to go in reverse order. Somebody asked, do you cover the expenses of your foster teenager, like her ER visit, and does she see her family? Great question. So I've mentioned this in a few episodes. You can go back to the latest two and it will go into more detail, but our teen is technically not in foster care. She is, we are hosting her through a program called Safe Families. And long story short, it acts very much like foster care in the sense that it takes children from newborns up through teenagers who don't have a safe or appropriate place to live, and it matches them with pre-approved and pre-screened and trained host families. And we host these children for a certain length of time. Usually, Safe Families is a shorter period of time that you're hosting. It traditionally does not lead to adoption. And also, this sort of leads me back to the question, Safe Families does not offer any kind of financial support like foster care does. In foster care, you get a per diem or a daily rate that you get reimbursed on a monthly basis to help you with the expenses related to caring for that child. And each state sets different rates. And it usually depends on the age of the child and the severity of any special needs that they might have. But with Safe Families, because it is a nonprofit organization, there is no financial or material assistance. So I don't have that per diem to help pay for our teen's expenses. However, she is on Medicaid. Is it Medicaid or Medicare? I always get them confused. I think it's Medicare, right? Medicaid is for the old people. Medicare is for everybody else. Anyway, she is on the state-funded insurance. So most of her health care is covered through that. She is on a plan that covers most everything, but not absolutely everything. So there have been some expenses for us, which are not fun. But of course, we knew going into this that we would not get any financial support because this isn't technically foster care. And, you know, we went into that eyes wide open. So we have not had to pay for ER visits out of pocket in full, but there have been some expenses that we have had just because of, you know, of having a teenager in your home. I was going to go in before I answer the second part of that question. The biggest expense that we have right now, to be honest, is her transportation. So she goes to a high school that is on the opposite side of town from us. And because she is technically classified as a homeless teenager, there is a law that essentially makes the school, no matter how far away the school is, get a bus to her to take her to and from school. But because of how early her school starts in the morning anyway, and then because of how far away we are from her school, the bus would have to get here at like 5 o'clock in the morning. And that's just ridiculous. And that's not going to work out. And she doesn't have a car yet. And the time that she has to start school is like conflicting with the time that Jack starts school. And they are also on the opposite sides of town. So what we've been having to do is just have Ubers take her to school. And that gets kind of expensive. So that's been a big expense, is just paying for her transportation to school and to work via Uber. But we are really lucky because we have a friend in the neighborhood who one day a week is giving her a ride to school in the morning. So we're really grateful for that volunteer support. And just another example of how fostering and hosting kids is really a community activity. And, you know, that kind of help is so, so important. So we're really grateful for that. But we are covering the expenses of everything else that you might imagine a teen in your home would need. So clothes and food and, she plays soccer. So soccer equipment and gear and uniforms and, all of that kind of stuff. So that is all on us. And does she see her family? She does see her family. So she has, a relationship with, her mother and her sister and her father, and she has a younger brother, and some aunts and uncles. And because of her age and because of the way the Safe Families program is run, she, just kind of sees her family whenever she wants to. So it's not like foster care where there are, set visit days and times. So she does have a relationship with them. So thank you for the question. Okay, somebody asked, could you give me more info on foster care adoption and also college funds and scholarships for children adopted through foster care? So I have a whole episode that is about adopting through foster care, and I'm just going to pull that up now so that I can tell you which one that is. If I were a more professional podcaster, I would pause this and then edit this pause out, but I am not a professional podcaster. So I'm not going to do that. So let's look this up here, guys. It is episode, I'm getting there. Just give me a pause here. Okay. It is episode 6, season 1, episode 6. It is called Adoption Through Foster Care, and it is a 45-minute lesson on how that works. And in that I touch on some of the benefits that you, maintain as a adoptive parent when you adopt a child through foster care. And one of those is that they are eligible for a program called 21st Century Scholars, and that provides some college scholarship money for maintaining a certain grade point average and participating fully in school. And then in Indiana, at least the state where we live, there are also other kinds of scholarships for state schools and a few other schools in the area for kids who have been in foster care at any point in their life. So even though Jack was adopted when he was 2 years old, he would still qualify for some of those scholarships. So it's definitely not a full ride, but it is a pretty sizable scholarship opportunity. So we are grateful for that. Somebody asked, if we are fostering children 2 and under, what should we have at our house for them before they even arrive? The short answer is absolutely everything. There are some people who wing it, but those people are crazy. Those people probably have a partner. Most caseworkers, when they do your home study before you're licensed, will want to see certain things that you have on hand. They'll want to see that you have a crib. They'll want to see the room where the child or the baby is going to be. So it's not like you can't have anything before the kid comes. But because sometimes the amount of time you have from when you say yes to when the kid is actually at your door is like an hour or two, I like to have literally everything on hand. I won't get into all those details because, once again, I have an episode on that. And that is episode number 9, Buying for Baby. And that's also a good episode even if you're not fostering or adopting. I just talk about what you really actually need for a baby or a kid under 2, because I've now bought for a baby 10 times and you don't need a lot. So you might want to look at that. And then also episode 3, Ready, Set, Foster, has some information about preparing for your first placement. And I include in there what you should have on hand if you are fostering an infant or a toddler or even an older child. One big tip, especially for children under 2, is I got a few outfits in
every size that are gender neutral, so that at least when a child comes to me, they've got two or three changes of clothes, no matter what size they are, or if they're a little boy or a little girl, until we can get to Target or something and buy more clothes. But definitely have the formula and the bottles and the crib and the diapers. I get just a small pack of diapers in each size. And then again, that way they've got enough for 24 hours and then we can go to Target and get the actual size that we need. But I have everything ready so that, I mean, literally you could drop off a baby at any time of the day or night and we would be set to go. So yep, that is my advice, because the last thing you want to do when you get that call is start figuring out what you need, because it's too late by then. Okay, someone asked, you've mentioned Jack's recent behavioral challenges. What happened there and how are you handling it? Okay, what happened there? So Jack was exposed to pretty much every drug under the sun when he was in utero. So his mom was addicted to drugs, and because of that addiction, just was not able to quit while she was pregnant with Jack. And I always kind of wondered when we were going to see the effects of that, because I felt like we had been too lucky up until now. He was born prematurely. He was underweight. He spent a little bit of time in the NICU. And then when he came to me, he had some developmental delays, but really pretty mild. Like, he walked late, he crawled late, he sat up late, and we did some physical therapy for a while, and he caught up really nicely. And now you can't tell that he was ever delayed. I mean, he's running, jumping, acting like a wild man. So I thought, okay, wow, we just had that very minor physical therapy need, and I feel like we got too lucky if he could have been exposed to all of that stuff and it didn't impact him in any way. And I should have knocked on more wood, because beginning about a year ago, but really the past 3 months, he has been having some behavioral challenges with aggression and with listening and following directions and just managing his big feelings. So frustration, anger, sadness, that kind of thing. And it's not... I just always feel bad when I talk about this, because 90% of the time, Jack is better behaved than most children his age. Like, he's very social, he's very verbal, he's incredibly smart, he's super affectionate, he's very charming. Like, he is just the best kid in the world. Like, I have babysat for kids that are way worse. You know, my friends have kids that are way worse. Sorry, guys. But then there's like that other 10 to 15% of the time, and unfortunately it's happening in school most of the time, where he is just being really aggressive and disruptive, to the point where his school said, only about a couple of weeks into him attending this year, hey, he can only come for half days because we just can't have him disrupting the rest of the class this much. And that was really tough to hear, because up until now, I have been so used to being the mom who hears nothing but great things about her child. Like, Jack is so charming. Jack is so smart. And so then to hear that he was being disruptive and aggressive, I was like, wait, what? My Jack was doing that? So that was really tough. But because I, you know, have had some education about what the substances that he was exposed to can do to the brain's chemistry and just the brain structure itself, I've always kind of been waiting for the other shoe to drop and bracing myself for these issues to happen. Of course, I should say that there is no test that can be given or no evaluation that can be done that can definitively say he is having these behavioral challenges because of the drugs that he was exposed to when mom was pregnant with him. Like, we don't know that. There are lots of kids whose mothers never use drugs during pregnancy who have these kinds of issues and even worse issues. And there are lots of kids whose mothers have used drugs during pregnancy who don't have any of this. So, you know, while I think that the drugs probably had something to do with it, who knows, right? Like, who knows? It just could be the luck of the draw.
So we got a handle on it really early in terms of seeking some help, because I have seen enough Dr. Phil to know that it's one thing to deal with this at 3 years old, and it's another to deal with this at 13 years old. So he is going to his school just a half day for now, again, because he was being so disruptive. And then one day a week he has play therapy, and another day a week he has occupational therapy, which helps with him learning how to regulate and control his emotions and seek sensory input in a way that's not aggressive. And then he also 2 days a week does a half day at a what's called a developmental preschool. So it's essentially like play therapy, but in a preschool setting. So it's for other kids like Jack, and then also some kids who have like autism or other issues. And it's run by these three like completely angelic women. Like, oh my gosh, they need to get a front row seat to heaven. They are incredible. They have the patients, like they make Mother Teresa look like an asshole. Like they're just so amazing. And, it's a speech therapist, an occupational therapist, and a behavioral therapist. And they sort of act as the teachers in the school and help these kids learn to navigate their issues in a classroom environment, so that the goal is that they can transition back to their quote unquote normal school full time. So if you're keeping count, that is three different kinds of therapy 4 days a week. And that's been a lot. He thinks it's really fun because this isn't like therapy that you and I might know. It all looks like playtime to him. Like the play therapist and the occupational therapist are in this really cool office with like all of these awesome toys, and there's a gym with swings and hanging ladders and ropes. And like he almost every day will ask, and he'll be like, "Is it time to go to Miss Megan's office? Can I play at Miss Megan's office?" Like he thinks it's a blast. But it's a lot logistically just for me to have to drive him around to these appointments, and then balance that with my career. And then our teen as well has just been a lot. And financially, it's a lot because all of these therapies are out of network and not covered by insurance and really, really expensive. So that has been something we did not anticipate. That has been a not very fun burden, but obviously definitely worth it. One thing I will talk about is that when you adopt through foster care, you can retain some of the per diem that you were receiving. So just to back up, for those of you who are new to this, when you foster, you get a per diem to help offset the cost of raising this child. And that amount varies state by state, and it varies depending on the age of the child and the degree of any special needs they might have. So it's roughly anywhere from like $20 to $50 to $60 a day. And you get that monthly, and it's kind of backdated. So you get it like you basically get reimbursed. When you adopt through foster care, you can negotiate with the Department of Child Services to keep all of or a portion of that per diem until that child is 18, even though they're not in foster care anymore, just to kind of help support you, which is a really great perk and really helpful for people like myself who are a single adoptive mom, when that income can really come in handy. I hate talking about it because I hate the fact that I'm like negotiating a dollar amount to help with the care of my son. Like that feels icky. He's not like a car. But that's the reality of it. And like in any negotiation, the state is trying to give you the lowest possible offer, and you are trying to get the most to help offset the expenses. And so the state really lowballed us, and, they ended up giving us $120 a month toward his care, which is kind of laughable, but I was like, you know what? $120 is $120. We'll take it. And frankly, I was so
ready to be completely done with the Department of Child Services and just move on with the adoption that I just didn't want to keep negotiating. And also Jack didn't have any special needs at that time. So I was like, yep, great, fine. We'll take the $120 and let's move on. But the great thing is that you can, at any time until the child turns 18, renegotiate that subsidy if your circumstances change. So if your income goes down, if you lose a job, or if your child develops some special needs or requirements that increase your costs, you can renegotiate and try to get more. Of course, you have to submit like all this proof and things like that. But generally, when you have a legitimate case, it's successful. And so we are in the process of renegotiating that subsidy to help offset some of the cost. I mean, I will say, even if they grant us the full subsidy amount, the most that we can get, I mean, it still only would cover a third of the expenses on a monthly basis that we have for him because of the therapies. But that's better than what we have now. So I will take it. So it's just been tough. And it's also been tough just to let go of some of my own expectations because the school that he's going to now, I picked it because I think it's the best school in the entire state. I mean, it's a really progressive school. They place a huge value on community activism and equality and social justice, but then also academically, it's very challenging. I mean, their teachers are amazing. Like just the credentials of their teaching staff, it's incredible. And when you follow, so the school goes from preschool or to pre-K through eighth grade. And when you look at the kids who have graduated eighth grade from there and where they go to high school and then where they go on to college, like they're doing incredible, amazing things. And so I became quickly one of those moms who was like, oh, Jack is going to get into the school because you have to like have a play audition, basically. They have a play observation where they determine if your child would be a fit for the school. So I was like, okay, we're going to have a great play observation and he's going to get in and he's going to do so well and he's going to graduate from eighth grade and get into the best high school in the state. And that's going to lead him to the best college in the state. And he's going to be so successful. And like, he's three. In fact, he was two when we were going through the play observation, but I fell into that trap. And so it's a little bit of letting go of my own expectations because now all of a sudden he's on the verge of being kicked out of the school because he's being so disruptive. And just letting go of the fact of like, okay, so maybe he's not going to turn out exactly like I thought, but also maybe he will. I mean, he's just 3 years old and, you know, just because he's having some challenges at three doesn't mean he's going to have challenges at 13 or 20. And even if he does have those challenges, like he's still going to be the most amazing thing in the whole wide world. So, it's just been a little bit of a challenging time. And today was particularly challenging. Some of these behaviors have been escalating at home too. And when you are a single parent and you don't have another partner that you can say, hey, I'm tapping out for 10 minutes. I need you to give me a break. That can be really stressful. You know, when Jack is being aggressive and having a meltdown and like today, that's what he was doing. I was on a work call in my home office and it was supposed to be his nap time, but I could hear like this huge commotion going on in his room and his nanny was trying to put him down for a nap and he was just, I mean, being super aggressive and melting down and I mean, I could hear it down the hall. So I had to leave the meeting and go like, you know, kind of run some interference with the nanny and in fact had her just go home for the day because Jack was being so awful. And then, you know, our teenager is asking for something and it's just like, oh my gosh, I just can't do it right now. So that's the tough part is just not having, some respite, you know, no one to help out and say, you know, you just go and do something for a couple of hours and cool off yourself and I'll handle this. So that's been tough, but also I feel so lucky because I know that there are parents out there, including single parents, who are dealing with much more difficult challenges than we are. And so for as tricky as it is for us right now, it could be a lot worse. It could be harder. Other people have harder circumstances. So I'm really grateful that I still have such a sweet, bright, funny, affectionate, hilarious boy. And I'm really proud of him, and we will get through this. And that is my really long-winded answer about how I'm handling his recent challenges. On that note, somebody said, how do you balance working full time and fostering during COVID? And the answer is, I don't know. I take Zoloft and that helps, and I eat my feelings. So those are my two pieces of advice. Eat your feelings and take some Zoloft and you'll be okay. It's really hard. It's better now because Jack's school is in person, although as I mentioned, he is going to like 4 different therapies a week. So logistically, it's a lot of driving and shuffling around. But at least there are windows where he is in school or therapy so I can work. We also have been fortunate enough to be able to afford the services of a nanny. So when all of the schools shut down here in Indiana in March and stayed shut down until just August, we had a full-time nanny. So we were really, really lucky that we could afford that and make that work. And that's how I was able to keep up with my job. But also nowadays, it's just a lot of fitting in work where I can. I might not always be available all of the time through the day because of Jack's appointments. But I will work at night. I will work on the weekends. I work early in the morning, and you just have to get it done in the pockets where you can and make it work. I try to plan important meetings during his nap time if our nanny isn't working that day, because right now we just have a very part-time nanny. And you just do the best you can. And also it helps that everybody is in the same boat. Like a lot of parents are struggling right now. So, but yeah, it's just kind of like, welcome to the shit show, everybody. So that's how I'm doing that. Somebody asked, why did you decide to pursue private adoption after adopting through foster care? So if you haven't listened to the last episode, I talk about how I would like to adopt again in the future so that Jack can have a sibling, and we have explored a private adoption rather than adopting through foster care for that. So I still want to continue to foster. I tell my mom, as long as I am financially and physically and mentally able to foster, I want to foster. But at the same time, I also want Jack to have a sibling. And the goal of foster care is always, always, always reunification. Adopting through foster care means that foster care failed the child. Adoption through foster care is always the last resort, and it only happens if there is just no possible way to safely reunite the child with their birth parents. So you never want to go into foster care hoping that you get to adopt. Because it doesn't always happen, and it's setting you up for heartbreak, and it is not fair to the child in foster care or the birth family to have a foster parent who is crossing their fingers that everybody fails so that they can adopt a child. So in order to ensure that Jack can get a sibling, private adoption was kind of the way to go. So, but I also have a lot of ethical concerns about private adoption. And I won't rehash all of that because I go into all of that in my last episode, but that's why we decided to look into private domestic adoption so that he could have a sibling, in sort of a more guaranteed fashion. And that way we can still continue to foster, but be in the right headspace when we're fostering. And that is not to be hoping that it ends in an adoption, but to be hoping that, the child can be reunited with their birth family safely. Okay, to some more fun ones. Somebody said, how do you decide when to introduce guys you are dating to Jack? This used to be a lot easier when he was a baby and a really young toddler and didn't know what was going on, because, you know, the guy could just come and pick me up for the date and Jack could be there, you know, in his little baby seat or crawling around on the floor and he wouldn't know the difference. But now, of course, he does know the difference. So I basically try to hide the guy until it is really serious. I'm always very upfront when I'm dating about the fact that I have a son and that I am fostering a teenager and that I want to continue to foster and adopt.
But Jack gets attached really easily, especially to men. Like, he loves men. He gets very attached to them. Like, we have a handyman who, you know, has come around a handful of times to, like, fix things in our house or whatever. And he probably hasn't been here in, like, 3 months or so. And Jack will still talk about him, like, almost every day. And so I don't want him to meet somebody, even very casually in passing, and then for him to get excited and want to hang out with them, and it's not a thing that goes anywhere. So because of that, I'm currently dating somebody now, just sort of starting to date somebody, and it's going really well, but I probably will not introduce Jack and this guy until or unless it becomes serious. And by serious for me, that means like we have had the conversation of like, yep, we are exclusive. We are in a relationship. You are my significant other. Like, I see this going somewhere and we are in this for the long haul, like almost like a step before engagement. That's kind of how serious I want it to be before I would introduce Jack at this point, because I want to be as sure as I possibly can that this person is going to be around for a while before I would let Jack get attached. So that is that. But I think it's important to do that before I would ever like get engaged, obviously, because I think that's sort of the final test in any relationship that I would have at this point is, you know, no matter how much I might like the guy, if he doesn't like Jack or he's not really interested in or invested with Jack or, you know, whatever, then it wouldn't work. And I think in the episode where I talk about dating as a single mom, I mentioned that there was a guy that I dated for almost a year and, he was just not at all interested in Jack, like would kind of ignore him when he would come to pick me up for a date and never really asked about him. And I knew that like, no matter how much I liked him, this was not going to work. So, Jack is the ultimate test. Okay. I'm going to try to answer this without it getting awkward. This person says, okay, TMI, but do you have the new guy over now that you have your teen? And isn't that awkward? So I do have the new guy over, even though we have our teen here, and I think it definitely has the potential to be awkward. So I try to time it to where our teen isn't here, because also, I mean, even though she's 17 and will be 18 in just, a couple of months, and you know, it's not like I have to worry about her in the same sense that I worry about Jack getting attached. I don't think it's appropriate to just have like random dudes in the house while she's here. Not that that would happen anyway. That sounds like I've got a whole bunch of gentlemen callers lined up, which I do not. But, you know, I want to be a good role model to her and I want her to feel comfortable in our house. And I don't want her to have to worry about some random dude in our house. So I've been trying to time it so that, you know, if he comes over, it's when she is out with a friend or she's at work. That way I can be respectful of, you know, keeping the house free of strange men while she is here. That is more about just being a good role model and also like, yeah, not making it awkward. So yeah, those are, oh wait, I got one more here. Okay, now that you have a teenager, are you still open to fostering infants? Yes, because I have our teenager through Safe Families, they actually do not let you host if you have a foster placement, and DCS will not let you have a foster placement if you are hosting through Safe Families. For whatever reason, DCS and Safe Families do not like each other. And so you kind of have to pick one or the other. So our foster license is still active. We are still a licensed foster home, but we cannot have a foster placement while our teen is still with us. So, you know, for the foreseeable future, at least until
May, when she graduates from high school, we will not be having any foster placements just because we can't. If we could, I would, but we can't. But I think that's good timing anyway, because with Jack's behavioral challenges, we probably need to just focus in on that. But yeah, we would definitely like to keep, I always say we, I've got to stop saying we, guys, because I think I've talked about this before too, but an old boss drilled it into my head. She was like, it's never I, it's always we. If you say I, you sound like you're an egomaniac. So I say we all the time. And someone finally stopped me the other day and they're like, wait, do you like have a husband that I didn't know about? I was like, what? Oh no, I mean, just me. So I would definitely have another foster babe if we could, but they won't allow us to while we have our teen. Not because she's a teenager, but just because we have another placement through another organization. So yeah, when she decides to move on and move into her dorm at college or, get her own apartment, then yes, we will continue to foster little babes. But in the meantime, it is super fun to have a teenager and we are so excited about it. I think those are all the questions that I have now, guys. So there, I just crossed off a few messages that I have been neglecting to respond to. As always, if you have questions, feel free to shoot me a message on Instagram at efriedland. I probably won't get around to responding to you directly, but I will try to address it in a later episode. You can also email me, elizabeth.friedland@gmail.com. Also, I love to get your questions just to get ideas of what I should talk about, because the whole goal of this is to encourage more of you to become foster parents and adoptive parents or host a child with safe families. And so my goal is to give you as much info and insight as possible to empower you to make those decisions and to grow your life with these amazing kids. So thank you for listening and we will see you next time. Wait, no, I will see you next time. Not we, I.